Thank you for staying with us on Consider This. This is a special edition. We're looking at the Prihatin package. Sharad Kutan and I, Melissa Idris, are here. We're going to be speaking to YB Wong Chen, MP for Subang, who's joining us on the line now. Good evening, Wong Chen. Share your initial thoughts with us. How are you reading the Prihatin package that's just been announced?
Well, the numbers are a bit strange in the sense that they claim this to be a $250 billion package. On paper, it looks like $250 billion, but in actual fact, the spending is about $25 billion in real cash injection terms. And to give proper context to it, I mean, our GDP is $1.6 trillion. So if it's truly $250 billion, then we are ahead of the curve around the world in the sense that we're spending 16% of GDP. You know, Singapore, our neighbor, considered, you know, the standard bearer in Southeast Asia is only spending 11%. So we really have to relook the numbers and get down to the truth of the matter. And to the Prime Minister's credit, he did mention that the actual cash injection in his speech is only $25 billion. So that represents 1.6% of GDP. Mm. So those are my big numbers comment.
Okay.
Wong Chen, why would you discount the other components of the package? I mean, why are they not as significant as the fiscal injection that amounts to about $25 billion?
Yeah, the cash injection is important for consumer consumption. I mean, that's the key point. The injection gives money directly to the people through the welfare injection. About, if I recall, about 12 billion or so. And then the wage support, which is about another 6 billion. Those are real things, you know. I mean, they're actually physically handing it to people to be used to keep the domestic economy going through consumption and to retain jobs. I mean, those are the real things. The others, whether it's a moratorium on loans, whether it's government guarantees, those are a bit more tricky. They come in at a much later stage. What we need to do now is to ensure that the consumers and the general population at large have enough money to spend. And that's the key point. Of course, I respect that they have fiscal challenges. But, you know, they really need to get this right. And I think, you know, not overblowing the issue and saying that we're spending 16% of GDP, just getting down to the real bricks and mortar and just looking at the actual numbers, I think will give more confidence to the public overall.
Mm. Yeah, well, I take your point about the mesmerizing effect of that $250 billion claim that's kind of front and center in terms of much of the media. But when you don't have to pay a loan, it does in fact translate into having more cash in your pocket, does it not?
That is for the cash flow of the corporations in particular. I think some people, of course, if they don't have to pay their credit card loan or this gets deferred into a term loan or their car loans, eventually they have to pay it. You know, this is not a write-off. So the question is, if you're trying to help corporations, why are you trying to help them? In big macroeconomic terms, you're trying to help the corporations to retain workers and to make sure the workers continue to have pay, so that the money can go back to the economy and start consuming. Mm. If people lose jobs, and then we're into, you know, real situation. Having said that, $25 billion is not a small amount. You know, I was very surprised that the government has committed $25 billion in direct injection for a period of 2 to 3 months. 2 months for welfare, 3 months for, you know, the wage support subsidy scheme. So I'm not making fun of the government. I'm just saying that, you know, being more transparent and more honest about the numbers is probably a good thing.
Right. Well, I take your point about the worker protection for companies, for businesses, right? So this is to help companies stay afloat so that they can in turn help workers stay afloat and households stay afloat. Do you think, though, Wong Chen, that this is going to be enough to keep businesses afloat during this difficult time? Because, you know, we're talking about all of this against the backdrop of a slowing global economy against, you know, falling global demand.
You're right, there's a revenue problem. I mean, globally, even if you are exporting or you are still manufacturing, even though you're under MCO, some electronic industries have been given the exemption from MCO. So even though if you're doing this and you're still running, the actual revenue has dropped dramatically. And if we look at the China numbers coming in, the impact is close to about 30-something percent for Chinese factories in terms of their revenue and profitability over the last 2 to 3 months. So we do expect this to happen and to slow down. But it's about question of how to distribute this money, that is $25 billion. My main beef is I think the government will do much better if they transfer the money, about the bigger bulk of the money, through wage support subsidies rather than direct handouts to people. Because by doing that, you could actually protect and ensure that people do not remove or do not sack people, workers, over this period of 2 to 3 months that we're looking at.
And would that include the large foreign worker population? Are you suggesting, and if I understand correctly, the Pakatan Harapan statement on this package suggests a wage support of about 1,200 ringgit. Now, would that go to the foreign worker population as well?
I think there is no distinguishing point that the government has made. What we know is foreign workers tend to earn about 1,200 or...
We've just lost the audio. Wong Chen, are you there? We're gonna try and get Wong Chen back and try and connect that audio once again. But, you know, very interesting point, because the Pakatan Harapan has actually released a statement in responding to the Prihatin package, and some of the, I guess, the main issues that they've pointed out is that, well, they commended the bipartisan conciliatory approach. However, they have pointed out that for this fictional character, Makcik Kia, who represents the average Malaysian, you know, what happens to her after 2 months? So this is a two-time cash handout, but what happens after that? Is she left to fend for herself after 2 months?
Yeah, in fact, that statement, Melissa, had many other points. Like you say, they do commend the Prime Minister. They bring up his last paragraph to the top of their statement in terms of, you know, how he framed the political character of this particular crisis. He says, you might not have voted for me, but this is a government for all of you. They do ask some, I think, very interesting questions that we need answers to, like in terms of the reallocation of ministry budgets. They say, where will spending cuts be made? Now, that's not been made clear to us, I think, at this point. Also, they make mention of the need for perhaps wartime coordination in terms of procurement.
Oh, what's
that? Interesting element in the statement around the way in which a government might intervene in the market in order to secure some essential services and goods.
Okay. Well, in fact, you can ask that question to Wong Chen himself. We have him back, YB Wong Chen, the MP for Subang. Sharad had a question for you, Wong Chen.
Yeah, so, you know, in that statement, you know, if you could help us understand, one of the questions was the anticipated spending cuts. The other was the wartime coordination procurement aspect. I mean, that's an interesting suggestion. Could you elaborate on that, please?
Wartime? I don't understand that question. What wartime procurement act?
Well, so in the Pakatan Harapan statement, there was a call for the government to set up a wartime procurement coordinating system in order that some essential goods like masks and so on and so forth would be provided for. If you can't answer that question, perhaps you could...
I have a question for Wong Chen, just to follow up on the conversation we had earlier, Sharad, with Tengku Datuk Sri Zafrul, Finance Minister, and we asked about parliamentary oversight, particularly because this Prihatin package was crafted without any parliamentary oversight. He did say that, you know, we shouldn't confuse parliamentary oversight for daily execution of immediate operations. Now, I'm just wondering if I could get your comments on that, particularly since the Finance Minister did allude to a certain reallocation of resources from government ministries.
I understand that the Finance Minister wants to raise enough money for this 25 billion, and that he could be cutting certain costs from certain ministries. I don't think that we should intervene too much at this stage, because the main parliamentary oversight on government spending is really the Public Accounts Committee. And the Public Accounts Committee is, at the moment, you know, non-functional in the sense that, you know, there's been a change in the government and we have yet to resume parliament and we have to wait until May. So as long as parliament is not really restarted yet, it's going to be very difficult for us to do anything in practical terms. And we have to give the civil servants and the new government an opportunity to try to run. But we would like to be told what exactly they're doing, how they intend to implement, and that maybe we can give some constructive criticisms and support on these issues.
Mm. Wangjin, how much more bold could the government have been in rolling out this stimulus? Do you think it's essentially quite conservative in who actually bears the bulk of the burden of this crisis? Could it have been much bolder?
No, I think that the amount is about right. 25 billion cash injection is about right for a period of 2 to 3 months. You're looking at basically about 8 to 9 billion a month, which is what we project the government can afford and should do. I'm just more worried about the aspect on the wage support should be at least 2 times higher, and that maybe we can have a reduction on the side of direct handouts. Because, you know, if this thing, God forbid, lasts more than 3 months, I think a lot of companies will be under tremendous pressure to release people or to sack people or to remove people. Right. And that can be really devastating for the macroeconomic picture. So it's much better if the government focuses on the issue about job and wage subsidy rather than direct handouts, because, you know, giving direct handouts is not going to go very long or far. Mm. But whereas retaining jobs is going to be much more consistent and better.
Okay, I agree with you in terms of job protection is the first tier, and perhaps the welfare provision or cash handout comes second or is secondary. I want to get your thoughts very quickly that of how this Prihatin package perhaps benefits the M40, because according to the finance minister, this is the first time that the M40 folks are also included. Do you have a response?
Yeah, the M40 folks are the ones that have the cars, the BMW, Mercedes, and the Toyotas that they have to pay. So they're having a moratorium on the loans. I think that's how they will benefit. Most M40s, they don't really fall under the back bracket of getting support. So some of them will get, under the 4,000 barrier income thing. It depends how you define M40s, but they will get something out of it. So it is true that the government is doing this, but M40 actually really need to protect their jobs rather than get handouts.
All right, well, that's all the time we have, Wangjin. Thank you so much for joining us this evening and sharing your immediate reactions to the Prihatin package. It was just launched earlier in the day. Now, that's all the time we have for this episode. We're going to wish you a good weekend. I'm Melissa Idris. With me, Sharad Kutan. As always, folks, stay home and stay safe. Good night.